What we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita now is from Canto 8. Some of the, beginning with chapter 10, then we'll skip a few chapters and we'll move to the point of Bali Maharaj and his surrender to Lord Vamandev. After hearing about the kindness of Krishna to his devotees and how he gives himself even to his devotees, and how he'll accept anything from a devotee if it is offered with love, affection. So, by the mercy of Srimad Bhagavatam, perhaps our desire to actually become a devotee has increased. Then what is the next step? The next step we'll hear about in regard to Bali Maharaj. And I'll say myself that this section, and also the next section, will be basically a continuation of this. Is a very difficult or embarrassing one for me to read, but yet, because I'll have to pay attention carefully, I'll continue. What we'll do is I'll tell a lot of this class. I'll be telling the past on the story, and then we'll read some purports. Most of them are very short, but they're very powerful. So this pastime about Bali Maharaj begins in the 8th canto, the 10th chapter. It's right after the churning of the ocean of milk, which is an incredible pastime. During that pastime, the demons and the demigods, they churn the ocean of milk together. So many things are produced. And finally, Amrita is produced. Amrita means what? Nectar. And what does Mrita mean? Death. And Amrita means that which will provide deathlessness. And, of course, that's a whole another pastime. But both the demigods and the demons are interested in Amrita, or deathlessness. But what foils the demons from getting it? Mahini Murti. And what was their dealing with Mahini Murti? They became bewildered. They wanted to enjoy. They wanted to enjoy the opposite sex. And therefore their attempt for deathlessness was completely pulled out from under them. And because they were bewildered by the Lord in that sense, in that way, the result was they had their desire was frustrated, and therefore what happens when one's desires are frustrated? Kama Esha, Krodha Esha. They became very angry. And naturally, who was their anger directed towards? It was directed towards their seeming enemy, which was the demigods. Of course, when our desires aren't satisfied, we tend not to direct our anger against ourselves and our foolishness for having those desires, but it's always projected into someone else. So the demigods were the object, the projection of the demons' anger, their frustrated desires, and they attacked with a fury. Bali Maharaj was their commander-in-chief, and they were fighting and fighting and fighting. Now Indra, what was Indra's weapon? What was his main weapon? The thunderbolt, the Vajra. So he was using that very strongly, and the demons were in trouble. But then Bali Maharaj began resorting to his demonic mystic powers, and so many amazing things he was able to produce. He was able to produce great mountains, and from the mountains elephants would fall on the others, and snakes and rocks and fire. And it was very difficult for the demigods. But then When the demigods were in difficulty, the Lord came to protect them. And he began, first thing he did, and this also occurs in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj when he's fighting the Rakshasas, first thing he did was dispel the demoniac illusion. And when Dhruva Maharaj is fighting the Rakshasas, he gets a mantra, or rather he's told by the sages to remember the Lord, Prabhupada's purport to that is so wonderful and so powerful, that when we are attacked by demoniac illusions, making something seem to be happening, although nothing's happening, some desire is coming in our heart, and we're thinking that something's going to be the object of that desire, and therefore we become attracted and attached to it. That's actually a demonic illusion. And Prabhupada's purport explains that just as these demonic illusions were removed for Dhruva Maharaj by his remembrance of the Lord, if we simply chant Krishna's names, the Hare Krishna mantra, all this will go away. So in any case, in this fight, in the presence of the demoniac illusion, the Lord himself appeared, Lord Narayan appeared, and immediately everything was dissipated. And then he began killing all the demons. All the powerful demoniac soldiers the Lord killed. Then in chapter 11, it describes how all the demigods who were killed by the demons were brought back to life by the Lord. And then what happened? Then Indra, with renewed courage, again began to fight with Bali Maharaj, and using his thunderbolt, Bali Maharaj fell to the ground. So many demons were killed, it appeared that they were going to be completely annihilated. And then Narada Muni came. When Narada Muni comes, it's always by the Lord's inspiration. So he came and reminded the demigods that victory, because when you're fighting and you're defeating the opposing army, there's such a tendency to feel that you are powerful, that you are great, and these people are getting what they deserve. So Narada Muni reminded them that their victory was only due to the Lord's grace. They gave up their anger, they stopped fighting, and then Narada, always making the pastimes go on further, he brought the demons to the hill known as Astagiri. He placed them in the charge of Sukracharja, who brought everyone back to life, all the killed demons, he brought back to life using a Sanjivani mantra. And then, especially when he brought Bali Maharaj back to life, and it's actually some very nice verses, when Bali Maharaj had lost the battle, even though one would expect almost as a story to go on, they were so angry with the demigods for them working together for the Amrit and them losing it. You'd expect them, due to their anger, to be able to win. And then they lost. But Bali Maharaj was very detached because he was an exalted soul. So he did not lament. And there are very, very nice verses in the Bhagavatam about this. After this point, in chapter 12, is Lord Shiva and Mohini Murti. Chapter 13, a description of the future Manus. Chapter 14, the system of universal management. And the story, this pastime, continues with chapter 15. So after being brought back to life by Sukracharja, Bali Maharaj surrenders to him. What was his impetus to surrendering to Sukracharja? What power Sukracharja had? He was able to bring the dead back to life. He wanted something from Sukracharja. And Sukracharja was ready to supply it to Bali Maharaj. And together, on Bali Maharaj's behalf, he performed the sacrifice known as Vishvajit, which means Vishvajita. He was able to conquer the universe after this sacrifice. So, from the sacrificial arena, and the stories in the 8th canto are especially like majestic and way bigger than life, and something that someone will one day make a great movie out of. They're such adventure stories and wonderful. From the fire of the sacrifice appeared a wonderful chariot
a bow, infallible arrows, and armor, all for Bali Maharaj in his attempt to conquer the universe, to take over the position of Indra, to drive the demigods from their positions. So with those accoutrements of war, for battle, Bali Maharaj decorated himself, and he obtained the blessings of Sukracharya to conquer, and the blessings of Prahlad Maharaj to conquer. And then, with the entire army, he marched on the capital city of Indra. And he was effulgent. He was powerful in his weapons and armor and arrows. And Indra was very frightened upon seeing them, the opposing armies outside of his capital city. And he went to his Guru Maharaj, his Brihaspati, and said, "What should we do?" And Brihaspati said, "They are too powerful right now due to the blessings of Sukracharya and the other Brahmins. You cannot defeat them no matter what you do." But later you will be able to defeat them when they offend Sukracharya and he curses them. Then you will be able to regain the kingdom. But now, all you can do, leave. Retreat. When you have no choice, you retreat. So the demigods made themselves invisible, and using their own power, they retreated. So the demons were very, very happy. They entered the city, they took over. The concept of ruling is very different in the Vedic culture. The concept of obtaining something is different in the Vedic culture. Even if someone is a complete materialist, there is always an acknowledgement that there is a power greater than me that I need to get the blessings of. I cannot do anything on my own. A materialist, on the other hand, thinks of himself, his own power. If I desire it strongly enough, if my will is strong enough, then there is no limit to what I can achieve. Bali Maharaj, although acting very materialistically, was not thinking in this way, and he began to perform Ashvamedha Yajnas, sacrifices to increase his piety, because he knew, without piety, I may have obtained the kingdom of heaven, but I cannot keep it. I cannot maintain my rulership. So under Sukracharya's advice and tutelage, he began to perform one Ashvamedha sacrifice after another, trying to do 100, because Indra had performed 100. How many did Prithu Maharaj perform successfully? 99. It's interesting that Yudhisthira Maharaj, how many did he perform? 3. And it is said, Prabhupada explained in his purport, although Indra performed 100, Yudhisthira Maharaj performed only 3, yet Yudhisthira Maharaj's fame by the grace of Krishna would even be greater than Indra's. So Bali Maharaj wished to perform Ashvamedha sacrifice after sacrifice after sacrifice. And he was like a brilliant moon ruling his kingdom of all the worlds. That is chapter 15. Of course we're going over. Then again, Bali Maharaj is very happy. And when someone's happy, you can guarantee that someone else is crying. So who is crying in this case? Not Indra in this particular case, but Indra's mata, Aditi, was very upset because her own children had been removed from the kingdom of heaven. And Indra and the other demigods, because she's the mother of all the demigods and her, and the other wife of Kasyapa, named Diti, is the mother of all the demons. So, Aditi went to Kasyapa and explained her misery to him and requested him to please give her something to do that would bring her sons back to power. Kasyapa, being a great sage, he was amazed again at the potency of the illusory energy, and he said, "By which
The Lord's illusory energy is so powerful. The entire world is bound by affection for their children. But yet, he gave her some devotional service to perform. And does anyone know the name of the vrata that she gave? The payo vrata. What does payo mean? Milk. So this sacrifice, or vrata, austerity, would be very pleasing to Lord Vishnu. And when Vishnu is pleased, then there is nothing that is impossible to obtain. So he assured her that when the Lord is pleased if you perform this payavrata, and there were 12 days of only drinking milk and existing only on milk, and one would have to read the Bhagavatam and worship deities and feed the brahmanas. There's a whole list of all the performances that have to be strictly performed. And chanting mantras. But the result of performing this payavrata would be the Lord's pleasure, Lord Vishnu's pleasure. And then when the Lord is pleased, you would just ask him, okay, this is what I want. And the result would be just as she wanted. She would lose. She would regain the children, would regain the kingdom of heaven. So Aditi, this is chapter 17, successfully performed this payavrata. And it's interesting if you calculate in the Bhagavatam the dealings between Kasyapa Muni and Diti and Kasyapa Muni and Aditi, there are several pastimes that occur in this. And this is, I think, the final one in this. Before this, Diti, in the sixth canto, she performs a sacrifice that's incredible. Right at the end of the sixth canto, and as a result of that, the Maruts, and they're just incredible. The lesson we learned from that everyone was performing in that sacrifice, in that vrata, everyone was performing what they were doing with the wrong motives. Indra was serving her to find a flaw so he can ruin what she was doing. She was performing the vrata, which is also worship of Lord Vishnu, for the purpose of killing Indra. Everyone was doing things with the wrong motive, but because it was worship of the Lord, only good came from it. So wonderful. And the other famous dealing between Kasyap and one of his wife brought forward something else very wonderful, really wonderful, was Haranyakasipu and Haranyaksha, who were talking about awesome. But here, the result was that the Lord appeared. And she came right out and said, "O Lord, what I desire is that you conquer my rivals. I don't want these demons to be ruling. I want my sons to be ruling." And the Lord acknowledged that he understood her desire. And he said that the demons were now protected by the Brahmins. And therefore, they were unconquerable. He wouldn't even interfere with the protection of the Brahmins. Yet, the Lord, Lord Narayan, wished to fulfill her desire because she had satisfied him and because of Kasyapa Muni's austerities. So therefore, he agreed to become her son. So the Lord would then, as Vamanadeva, protect her other sons. So, in time, from the Lord entered, Lord Vamandev entered the semen of Kasyapa Muni and was transferred into the womb of Aditi. And the Lord was therefore in her womb, and Lord Brahma began to offer prayers. Then, this is chapter 18, Lord Vamandev appeared on the day known as Vijay Dwadasi. And first he appeared with his four arms, and then he assumed a form of a very, very beautiful dwarf Brahmin Brahmachari. And one by one the demigods came to observe this beautiful incarnation of the Lord. And Lord, the sun god, offered him the Gayatri Mantra.
The demigods offered him gifts one by one. And when he exhibited his Brahman effulgence, he surpassed the beauty of everyone. He was so effulgent and wonderful. And then, while Bali Maharaj was performing one of those Aswamedha sacrifices, Lord Vamandev proceeded towards that sacrificial arena just for the purpose of what? Showing Bali Maharaj's mercy. Very interesting in this regard, and it also comes out in the Vritrasura pastime. And which canto is that? Sixth canto, Vritrasura. That who is actually getting the mercy of the Lord and who is not really getting of the mercy of the Lord is hard to tell. Because Vritrasura was preaching to Indra and said, you're getting what you want. You're going back to heaven. You're getting your kingdom. And I'm getting what I want. So the Lord is giving us exactly what we want. Yeyetam mampapadyante. And what is it that you want? Again, you want the kingdom of heaven. And I want to go to Him. I want to go to the spiritual world. And look what He's doing to bring me to Him. He's performing this entire incredible pastime. And I'm getting my head cut off, but I don't care. I don't care. I want to go to Him. So Vamandev, in order to show Bali Maharaj mercy, superficially to show Indra mercy, but really to show Bali Maharaj mercy, he proceeded to the sacrificial arena. And it describes he was very heavy in weight, and with his steps, each step as he proceeded would make the earth tremble. With his shining effulgence, he approached, and when someone comes who's very effulgent like that, everyone becomes attracted. So everyone in the sacrificial ceremony, immediately, as soon as Vamandev appeared, immediately everyone offered their obeisances. And Bali Maharaj was jubilant to see him. He offered him a seat. Immediately, this Brahmin boy had come, so beautiful, so effulgent. He offered him a seat. He worshipped him. He washed his lotus feet. And he took the water that had washed his feet and placed it upon his own head and the heads of all his family members. Vamandev came this specific times of the ceremony when different things are allowed. So at that time, begging was allowed. And you have to fulfill what is asked of you at that time. Otherwise, it would be inauspicious for the sacrifice. So he knew that Vamandev had come for begging. And he said, my dear boy, I'll give you whatever you want. Do you want cows? How many? Because he was the Lord of the universe at this time. You want villages, you want food, you want drink, you want a Brahmana wife, horses, anything, chariots, many villages, whatever you want, I will give you. Vamandev appreciated the spirit of Bali Maharaj, and he glorified him and his family members. He did it in a very, very cute way, in a very sweet way. He went through all his glorious family members, beginning with Haranyaka and his ancestors, and Haranyakashipu. They were so valiant, he said. He explained it much, very, very cute and sweetly, and in a way, and the purpose was, there is no member of your family who has ever promised to give charity, but has not fulfilled that promise. So you have offered to give me charity, so the tension is starting to build. How will he favor Indra, but really, Vamandev, how will he favor Bali Maharaj? So, first, again, he glorified Prahlad Maharaj and Virochana, Bali Maharaj's father. And then he said, what do you want from me, Bali Maharaj? All I want is by my own steps 3 paces of land. Bali Maharaj was amazed. He said, 3 paces of land? Do you know who you're asking from? This is Bali Maharaj. I am the ruler of the universe.
if you ask me for a little bit today, then you'll be asking someone else for something tomorrow, and someone else the next day. The universe is mine. You ask me for anything. Again, gold. Ask for enough gold that you never have to ask anyone for anything for the rest of your life. Villages, anything. I will give you whatever you want. Please be intelligent. It seems, my dear boy, that you don't actually have intelligence. Ask me something that will make you so satisfied that you will never have to ask anyone for anything again. And Vamadev replied, was very, very intelligent. He said, if someone, not fully honest, but very intelligent, if you are not satisfied with 3 steps of land, person who is not satisfied with 3 steps of land will not be satisfied even if he possesses the entire universe. This is really the case. Krishna has said the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita, talking about desire or lust. He compares it to fire. Because no matter how much fuel is put on a fire, the fire never says, that's enough, I'm satisfied. Rather, it simply increases its appetite and size, and similarly with desires. The more we have, the more we want, and the more dissatisfied we become. So anyway, when Vamanadev said, all I want is 3 steps of land, then Vali Maharaj said, yes, I will give that to you. Whatever you wanted, I will give to you. Stop! Sukracharya came in. Vali Maharaj is spiritual master. You fool! You have promised this Brahmin boy, this is Vishnu. He will take everything from you. He will cheat you. In the name of 3 steps of land, he will take everything. And what will he do with that? He will give everything to the demigods, your enemies. He will expand. He will take in charity 3 steps. He will cover everything with 2 steps. He predicted what would happen. You won't even have enough to give him for his 3rd step. And then you will not be able to fulfill your promise. And because you have promised, then you will not be able to fulfill it. But don't worry. I will advise you how to get out of this. You promised, but you didn't say om after. And a promise is not complete until you say om after. And not only that, to give in charity in such a way that endangers one's own life is not sanctioned in Shastra. So it's not actually dishonest to do this. Just tell him no. Divide your wealth. I'm not speaking against giving charity. Divide your wealth, give him a portion, but you must maintain some for yourself. And then there is the intimation there. Because if you don't maintain wealth for yourself, how will you maintain? And how will I be maintained?
That's also
you can refuse him. All you have to do, you have to care for your body. This is religious principles. Tell him no. That was chapter 19. Bali Maharaj spent some time deliberating on his spiritual master's words. But he replied in a very tactful and sweet way, my dear Maharaj, what you have said about material responsibility is correct. But, and he wasn't going to follow. So I'd like to read, and if you have your sheet, follow that. Chapter 19, 8:19. Chapter. Actually, I missed one. I missed one of the purports. We'll go back a bit to 32, when Sukracharya is saying, he says, this person, falsely appearing as a brahmachari, is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari.
This is 8:19:32. Who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, education. What's left? After taking everything from you, he will deliver to injure your enemy. That's insult, too. Your enemy will become powerful. Here's Prabhupada's purpose. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains in this regard that the very word Hari means one who takes away. If one connects himself with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord takes away all his miseries. And in the beginning, the Lord also superficially appears to take away all his material possessions, reputation, education, and beauty. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:88:8, Yasyaham Anugrahami Harisha Tadanam Shanai. The Lord said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, the first installment of my mercy toward a devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. This is the special favor of the Lord towards a sincere devotee. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions, which hinder his advancement in Krishna consciousness, by tactics, the Lord takes away all his possessions. Here, Sukracharya says that this dwarf brahmachari would take away everything. Thus he indicates that the Lord will take away all one's material possessions and also one's mind. If one delivers his mind to the lotus feet of Krishna, Savai Mana Krishna Paradavindayor, one can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Although Bali Maharaj was a devotee, he was attached to material possessions, and therefore the Lord, being very kind to him, showed him special favor by appearing as Vamanadeva to take away all his material possessions and his mind as well. And now going again to the point, going to where we were, where Bali Maharaj was considering the words of Sukracharya, the spiritual master, and he said, yes, what you have said is correct, but I am the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. This is 8:23. How can I withdraw my promise because of greed for money when I have already said that I shall give this land? How can I behave like an ordinary cheetah, especially towards a Brahmin? Now, just the last part of the purport here. Varochani, Bali Maharaj, received the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj. Now this is explaining why, this purport explains the exalted, why or how Bali Maharaj became exalted. He received the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, and by Prahlad Maharaj's mercy, he also received the mercy of Lord Vishnu, who appeared before him as a brahmachari beggar. Thus, Bali Maharaj became a Kripa Siddha because of the special mercy of both Guru and Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirms this favor, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. Bali Maharaj, by the grace of Prahlad Maharaj, got the seed of devotional service. And when that seed developed, he achieved the ultimate fruit of that service, namely love of Godhead, Prema Pamarto Mahan, immediately upon the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva. So as soon as he saw Lord Vamanadeva, love developed in his heart. He was fully ripe and ready for this. Bali Maharaj regularly maintained devotion for the Lord, and because he was purified, the Lord appeared before him. Because of unalloyed love for the Lord, he then immediately decided, I shall give this little dwarf Brahmana whatever he asks from me. This is a sign of love. What we are speaking about here is surrender. When we decide, we wish, we become attracted to the Lord and attracted to his dealings between he and his devotees, then the next step is to surrender. And that surrender isn't just do as you're told. It is like Bali Maharaj. He's doing this out of love. I shall give this dwarf Brahmana whatever he asks for me. This is a sign of love. Thus Bali Maharaj is understood to be one who received the highest perfection of devotional service by special mercy. Move on in the story. So we tend to have a very, at least myself, a very romantic idea of devotional service. That we become attracted to Krishna, I will surrender to him, and then everything will proceed very very smoothly as I gradually progress, happily preaching to the entire world, and this way happily go back to Godhead along with everyone else. Oh, how wonderful and sweet it is. But from my experience, it doesn't quite work that way. In fact, I don't think I've ever actually met anyone who it works that way for.
Also for Bhutan.
So, so Bali Maharaj said, there is nothing more sinful than of untruthfulness. Because of this, Mother Earth once said, I can bear any heavy thing except a person who is a liar. I do not fear hell, poverty, an ocean of distress, fall down from my position, or even death itself as much as I fear cheating a brahmana. And then he said, why shouldn't I give these things to him? I'm going to die. And I'm going to have to lose everything anyway. So what is the loss if I give these to the brahmana, those things which I'm going to lose? And my gain is great. So in this way, he began speaking to Sukracharya. And he gave so many examples. And then Sukracharya, you think he said, oh, how nice that you are so devoted to the Brahmins and to Vishnu and truthfulness. How nice. He had just instructed, Bali Maharaj to not surrender. Now Bali Maharaj is saying, yes, I'm promising, I'm giving him. And Sukracharya becomes very angry and says, you fool. This is Sukracharya's words. He says, you fool. Now you are so learned. You're so learned and so intelligent that you know more than me, your spiritual master. Therefore, I curse you. I curse you, and you will lose everything. And you will have to go to hell. So this is the beginning of the excitement. Backing up a little bit again. After Bali Maharaj said that he would not follow Sukracharya, that he would give everything to Vamanadeva, Prabhupada explains, Bali Maharaj could understand the pretense of Lord Vamanadeva. He clearly understood what was going on, that he was surrendering to Krishna, to the Lord, who had taken the sides of the demigods and who had come before him as a beggar. Although the Lord's purpose was to cheat him, Bali Maharaj took pleasure in understanding how the Lord will cheat his devotee to glorify the devotee's position. I would like to make the point, and as we'll hear as we go along, that surrender is not romantic, it is not cheap, and it tests one, especially it tests one's faith. And what I'm trying to learn myself is that even if we fail 1,000 times, we should get up each one of those times. And we are required to get up and try again on the 1,001st time. That's all we can do, is keep trying again and again and again. Although the Lord's purpose was to cheat him,
Bali Maharaj took pleasure in understanding how the Lord will cheat his devotee to glorify the devotee's position. Bali Maharaj is a Mahajana. We follow his path. He surrendered fully. And watch what happens. So he said, Bali Maharaj, whether he cheats or rewards, he is always good. Bali Maharaj therefore addressed him, the Lord, as Uttama Shloka, your lordship, he said. You are always praised with the best of selected verses. On behalf of the demigods, you disguised yourself to cheat me, saying that you wanted only 3 paces of land. Oh, this is later on. I got my parts mixed. Excuse me. But I'll read it anyway because it's so nice. On behalf of the demigods, you disguised yourself to cheat me, saying that you wanted only 3 paces of land. But later you expanded your body to such an extent that with 2 footsteps you covered the entire universe. Because you are working on behalf of your devotees, you do not regard this as cheating. Never mind. I cannot be considered a devotee. Nonetheless, because although you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, you have come to me to beg. I must satisfy you to the best of my ability. So please do not think that I wanted to cheat you. I must fulfill my promise. So what had happened was, when Bali Maharaj said yes, and Sukhacharya cursed him, and Bali Maharaj said, take what you want, then Lord Vamandeva expanded himself to a huge size of forearms. With his first step, he covered the world and the seas and the clouds and the sky. With the second step, he covered the entire universe, up to the heavenly planets, up to Satyaloka, Brahmaloka, and his toe even pierced through the universe, allowing some of the water to come, and that became the Ganga, the sacred Ganga, the holy water touched by the lotus feet of Lord Vamandeva. And when the Lord's foot was extended in that way up to Satyaloka, the residents of Brahmaloka began to worship that lotus foot. How wonderful! And then he returned to his size, his size as a dwarf brahmana, and said, you have promised me 3 steps of land. My first step, I covered the world. The second step, the universe. You're not keeping your word. You're a liar and a cheat. Then comes this purport. You have come to me to beg. I must satisfy you to the best of my ability. So please do not think that I wanted to cheat you. I must fulfill my promise. I still have my body. When I place my body for your satisfaction, please place your 3rd step on my head. Since the Lord had covered the entire universe with 2 steps, one might ask how Bali Maharaj's head could be sufficient for his 3rd step. Bali Maharaj, however, thought that the possessor of wealth must be greater than the possession. Therefore, although the Lord had taken all his possessions, the head of Bali Maharaj, the possessor, would provide adequate place for the Lord's 3rd step. So, at that time, Bali Maharaj gave the Lord's, gave his own head, his own body, to the Lord. And he said, I do not fear being deprived of all my possessions, living a hellish life, being arrested for poverty by the ropes of Varuna, or being punished by you, as much as I fear defamation. Although a father, mother, brother, or friend may sometimes punish one as a well-wisher, they never punish their subordinate like this. But because you are the most worshipable Lord, I regard the punishment you have given me as most exalted. So here is the Lord's working. Bali Maharaj was in love with the Lord by the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj and his own purification. And he surrendered to the Lord, who asked him only for 3 steps of land, not much. Then the Lord took everything. All his possessions, his wealth, his land, everything. And was the Lord satisfied? No. Next, he accused Bali Maharaj of being a cheater because of not fulfilling his promise and only giving him enough to cover 2 steps. So Bali Maharaj gave him his own body. Place your lotus foot, 3rd step, upon my head. Was the Lord satisfied? Not yet. Bali Maharaj says, since your lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, you act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. He was testing Bali Maharaj. He was pushing Bali Maharaj. There was nothing he wouldn't give. Nothing he wouldn't give. You act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige. By chastising us, you give us the eyes by which to see the right path. He only saw Krishna's mercy, no matter what was happening. Again, I feel very embarrassed to speak on this. But this is our homage on Bali Maharaj. Prabhupada's purport. Bali Maharaj considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead a better friend to the demons than to the demigods. In the material world, the more one gets material possessions, the more he becomes blind to spiritual life. The demigods are devotees of the Lord for the sake of material possessions. But although the demons apparently do not have the Supreme Personality of Godhead on their side, he always acts as their well-wisher by depriving them of their positions of false prestige. By false prestige, one is misguided. So the Supreme Lord takes away their position of false prestige as a special favor. Bali Maharaj continues. Many demons who are continuously inimical towards you finally achieve the perfection of great mystic yogis. Your lordship can perform one work to serve many purposes. And consequently, although you have punished me in many ways, I do not feel ashamed of having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna, nor do I feel aggrieved. So by this time, Bali Maharaj had not only given everything, he was tied up with ropes and embarrassed, and he had lost all his effulgence. He had lost everything. He would, like this, in front of everyone, the former king of the universe, now tied up with nothing. Nor do I feel aggrieved. Prabhupada's purport. Bali Maharaj appreciated the Lord's mercy not only upon him, but upon many other demons. Because this mercy is liberally distributed, the Supreme Lord is called all-merciful. Bali Maharaj was indeed a fully surrendered devotee. But even some demons who were not at all devotees, but merely enemies of the Lord, attained the same exalted position achieved by many mystic yogis. Thus Bali Maharaj could understand that the Lord had some hidden purpose in punishing him. What faith, what trust, complete, full. Consequently, he was neither unhappy nor ashamed. Tied up, lost everything. Because of the awkward position in which he had been put by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bali Maharaj continues. My grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, is famous, being recognized by all your devotees. Although harassed in many ways by his father, Hiranyakashipu, he still remained faithful, taking shelter at your lotus feet. Prabhupada's short purport. A pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, although harassed circumstantially in many ways, never gives up the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to take shelter of anyone else. A pure devotee never complains against the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A vivid example is Prahlad Maharaj. Examining the life of Prahlad Maharaj, we can see how severely he was harassed by his own father, Hiranyakashipu, but he did not divert his attention from the Lord even to the smallest extent. The one who was supposed to be always protecting him was his enemy and trying to kill him. And he simply kept, like a child with his father, so faithfully holding on and always keeping the Lord alive, faithfully in love with the Lord within his heart. Prahlad Maharaj remained fixed in his devotion to the Lord, despite the Lord's having punished him. He's saying, despite the Lord's having punished him, we will say usually that Hiranyakashipu is the one harassing him and punishing. Indeed, Prabhupada even said that in the purport. And here he's saying, this is the Lord, because not one blade of grass can move without the Lord's sanction. Bali Maharaj continues. What is the use of the material body which automatically leaves its owner at the end of life? And what is the use of all one's family members who are actually plunderers, taking away money that is useful for the service of the Lord and spiritual opulence? What is the use of a wife? She is only the source of increasing material conditions. And what is the use of family, home, country, and community? Attachment for them merely wastes the valuable energy of one's life. Take everything. I only want you. We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, advises, Sarvadhamam Pratyaja, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Give up all other varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. The common man does not appreciate such a statement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he thinks that during his lifetime, his family, society, country, body, and relatives are everything. Why should one give up any one of them and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? But from the behavior of great personalities like Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, we understand that surrendering to the Lord is the right action for an intelligent person. Next, Prahlad Maharaj came. Bali Maharaj was so embarrassed because he couldn't even offer him the proper respect. And Prahlad said, "My Lord," he spoke to Vamadeva, "it is your lordship who gave this Bali the very great opulence of the post of heavenly kingdom. And now, today, it is you who have taken it all away. I think you have acted with equal beauty in both ways. Because his exalted position as King of Heaven was putting him in the darkness of ignorance, you have done him a very merciful favor by taking away all his opulence." As it is said, Yasyaham anugrahami harishe tadanam shanai. It is by the mercy of the Lord that one gets all material opulence. But if such material opulence causes one to become puffed up and forget the process of self-realization, the Lord certainly takes all the opulence away. The Lord bestows mercy upon his devotee by helping him find out his constitutional position. For that purpose, the Lord is always ready to help the devotee in every way. But material opulence is sometimes dangerous because it diverts one's attention to false prestige by giving one the impression that he is the owner and master of everything he surveys, although actually, this is not the fact. To protect the devotee from such a misunderstanding, the Lord, showing special mercy, sometimes takes away his material possessions. Yasyaham anugrahami harishe tadanam shanai. Next, Vamandev himself is going to speak. So there is Bali Maharaj, lost everything, his effulgence, tied up with the ropes of Varuna, and just saying, "This is the most wonderful thing that has ever happened. You are purifying me." Such depth in his Krishna consciousness. Vamandev tested those depths, pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed to glorify his devotee Bali Maharaj. And now he says, although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies,
rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound, and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word.
Prabhupada's short purports. We'll read two.
Bali Maharaj passed the severe test put before him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is further proof of the Lord's mercy towards his devotee. The Supreme Personality of Godhead sometimes puts a devotee to severe tests that are almost unbearable. Almost unbearable. One could hardly even live under the conditions forced upon Bali Maharaj. That Bali Maharaj endured all these severe tests and austerities is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord certainly appreciates the devotee's forbearance, and it is recorded for the future glorification of the devotee. This was not an ordinary test. As described in this verse, hardly anyone could survive such a test. But for the future glorification of Bali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Personality of God had not only tested him, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. The Lord is so kind to his devotee that when severely testing him, the Lord gives him the necessary strength to be tolerant and continue to remain a glorious devotee. The Lord continued to say, because of his great tolerance, I have given him a place not obtainable even by the demigods. He will become king of the heavenly planets during the period of the Manus known as Suvani. Prabhupada's purport. This is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if the Lord takes away a devotee's material opulences, the Lord immediately offers him a position of which the demigods cannot even dream. There are many examples of this in the history of devotional service. One of them is the opulence of Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra suffered severe material scarcity, but he was not disturbed and did not deviate from devotional service. Thus he was ultimately given an exalted position by the mercy of Lord Krishna. Here the word Marasraya is very significant, because the Lord wanted to give Bali Maharaj the exalted position of Indra. The demigods might naturally have been envious of him and might have fought to disturb his position. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead assured Bali Maharaj that he would always remain under the Lord's protection. Mad Ashraya. And now finally, Bali Maharaj is going to reply. Sukadev Goswami said, when the Supreme, Ancient, Eternal Personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, who is universally accepted as a pure devotee of the Lord and therefore a great soul, Bali Maharaj, his eyes filled with tears, his hands folded, and his voice faltering in devotional ecstasy, responded as follows. Because Bali Maharaj had given his heart, and after the heart is given, he fully surrendered, then the externals are just that, external. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless, the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown to me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets.
Prabhupada's purport.
This is the second, this one, or? Eighth canto, 23rd chapter, second verse. Prabhupada's purport. When Vamanadeva appeared before Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj immediately wanted to offer him respectful obeisances. But he was unable to do so because of the presence of Sukracharya and other demonic associates.
The Lord is so merciful. The Lord is so merciful, however, that although Bali Maharaj did not actually offer obeisances, but only endeavored to do so within his mind, the Supreme Personality of Godhead blessed him with more mercy than even the demigods could ever respect. He just made the attempt, and the Lord accepted that attempt as if the full deed was done. But that attempt was sincere, full sincere attempt. It's confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayad. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana because he takes only the essence of a devotee's attitude. If a devotee sincerely surrenders, the Lord, as the Supersoul in everyone's heart, immediately understands this. Thus, even though externally a devotee may not render full service, if he is internally sincere and serious, the Lord welcomes his service nonetheless. Thus, the Lord is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana because he takes the essence of one's devotional.
And the Lord sent him to hell. But it was the most wonderful, wonderful thing.
And the Lord actually became Vamanadeva's doorkeeper, his servant, his chokidar. He gave up everything. He surrendered everything. But he received the Lord. Text 4. Thus having delivered the proprietorship of the heavenly planets to Indra, and having fulfilled the desire of Aditi, mother of the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead ruled the affairs of the universe. So Indra got his kingdom back. And Bali Maharaj got the Lord.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Bali Maharaj ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai. All the Vaishnava Maharajas and Maharanis ki jai.
Bali Maharaj attempted to surrender, but my attempt was not successful. It was only an attempt. I always stumbled over this part. I mean, does he say it? Does he say this out of the natural humility of a Vaishnava? You know, from my perspective, I'm not nearly as big as Bali Maharaj, of course. But when I look at Bali Maharaj, I mean, he did wonderful. He gave everything, his possessions, his body, and also his mind. I mean, he accepted the Lord, his fame. Yeah. Now. I mean, this is a little discouraging. If this is only an attempt, I think it is everything. But is he saying it? Is there some Vaishnava?
It's from the purport. From the purport, it indicated that when Vamandev came, he wanted to offer obeisances, and in his mind he was doing it. But because of the presence of Sukracharya, he wasn't actually able to fall down at the Lord's lotus feet, and that was that obeisance is a token of surrender. So. This is what the Prabhupada's purport seemed to indicate. That even though all I did was mentally do it, you accepted the whole thing as if I had fully surrendered. But as you're saying, he had given his heart, although the externals weren't fully manifested until Vamandev started taking everything and everything and everything. But I just understood that from Prabhupada's purport.
Isn't there something?
Yeah. The attempt was full. Just for one moment, let's all take a look at Giriraj as the light is, and listen to the sounds of the. It seems to me that unless one tastes the sweetness, it's really impossible to surrender. Is that right or not right? Yes. Certainly helpful. And isn't something that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said he didn't make surrender a prerequisite. Just chant Hare Krishna and let it... There's something like that, yes? Hers is. And the Bhagavatam gives us some taste that pulls that. Yes. Did you have... You want to...
Kind of on the same topic. I was just wondering if...
And again, the point is made in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says that by your own nature you're going to fight anyway. So what does Krishna actually want from Arjuna? He wants the bhakti. He wants to be able, with bhakti, he'll use Arjuna as he likes. Anyone want to add anything? Surrender is considered the beginning of bhakti for that reason, beginning of loving devotion.
You were mentioning, you said, out of love I will do it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, is this term surrender
Saranam
the exact definition and the exact meaning? I think it's a very good question. To what extent within it is that force or even out of love?
Please.
The first type.
Shall I repeat what you're saying?
No. If you wish, I think it's valuable.
Okay. There are two types of surrender. No, I think it's valuable.
Two types are there. The first is because you have no other choice.
The second, which is higher, is because when you voluntarily surrender. Does that satisfy what you were saying? Asking about?
Yeah, but what if...
If you have a paid servant, and you say, wash the dishes, and the person does it because they're being paid, is that a bhakti type of surrender? Or is it a do as you're told? They're not doing it out of affection and love for you. They're doing it because if they don't do it, you're going to not pay them anymore. Is that actual surrender? Yeah. Yeah.
Or you could do it because you want to get to the level of love, but you're not there yet.
Yeah. So the question is, at which stage is it surrender? Or are all those stages surrenders?
What does the word actually mean?
Was Sharanam. Do we have a Sanskrit? Well, of course, the definition is given in as Anukulasya Sankalpa Pratikulasya Varjanam. And out of those, the main anga, the main part of surrender, out of those six, is considered looking to Krishna fully for protection. And the rest are adjuncts of that. So when one is looking only to Krishna for one's shelter, that is the natural consciousness, that's natural Krishna consciousness.
Well, how?
Yeah.
How has it come to pass in our society that it's often the word surrender is equated with doing what the Tamil president or the singer Tamil asked you to do?
That was probably about 30 years ago.
In the VIP.
Yes.
There's also an interesting highlight given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, where he explains two kinds of surrender. One is Atmanamedana, which is what we're talking about, really Bali Maharaj, and the other one is Sharanagati.
So he just uses those terms to distinguish, yes.
So Atmanamedana is when it's mine, but I'm giving it to you, Krishna.
Yes.
Sharanagati is I'm yours.
Mm.
So the Atmanavedana is not so deep as a Sharanagati.
Mm.
And Sharanagati also has a primary and a secondary meaning. The primary meaning is surrender, but the secondary meaning is giving shelter. So to the extent that you feel shelter, to what extent you can surrender.
Mm.
That was the definition.
I'm sorry. Could you
I just thought of something
from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sinda in relation to what Burajan was saying. And that is that there are two kinds of surrender mentioned by Rupa Goswami. One is called Atma Navedana, which we're talking about now, and the other is Saranagati. So here we're talking Atma Navedana. That means that it's mine and I'm giving it to you, Krishna. And Saranagati means I'm yours. So obviously the second one is the higher platform. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains that this word has a primary and a secondary meaning. The primary meaning is surrender, but the secondary one is giving shelter. So to the extent that we feel sheltered, to that extent we can surrender.
Second definition that when you're thinking that Krishna, I'm yours, it takes out the sense in the word surrender, the definition of any type of, you know, force, or it seems like it's a realization.
But obviously this doesn't mean that external things don't engender surrender. That's the processes of bhakti. But to remain on the level of force forever isn't very palatable. What do you think?
Saranagati, I'm yours. This is really the mood of these wonderful songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and since it's done from the mood of one's constitutional position as an eternal servant of Krishna, in the spiritual Sugadi and a spiritual form.
But also it's said that taking it a step more, that in Vaikuntha the mood is I am yours, and in Vrindavan the mood is Mamata, you are mine. Okay. Thank you very much.